This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The enemy wanted him to come out all blasted. But my line myself said no, though.
Cassius, I know the real God.
Cassius, wait a minute, Cassius.
You must listen to me.
We could not foresee the difficulties that would lie ahead as far as military service and, of course, the Muslim affiliation.
You won't fight for your country. You refuse to go into the...
I'm a minister of my religion. This country has laws for ministers.
Mr. Muhammad Ali has just refused to be inducted into the United States Armed Forces.
It took an all-white jury less than a half hour to find Muhammad Ali guilty of all charges and specifications.
A different time, and a guy who goes from, well, nearly in prison, to one of the most beloved figures in American culture. Muhammad Ali died this week, and Rick Hogan's here. Good morning, buddy. Nice to see you.
It's sad. This is one of the most amazing lines. I was just talking to Dave Ennett about it. I can't imagine anybody getting this kind of deserved coverage. I mean, a lot of things are overblown in this world, in this life, but this is one that's not.
Well, Andrea and Mary aren't old enough, but you and I and Dave are.
Thank you, Steve.
To remember what a big deal Ali was. You know, there's famous, and then there's Ali.
No question.
Right?
No,
I mean, you know, this is a Madonna.
And the one thing to remember, this is his huge fame was pre-internet, pre-Twitter,
exactly.
Pre-Instagram. You're not having, you know, it used to be at O'Hare all the time. You didn't have thousands of shots of Muhammad Ali going all over the place. The people in the middle of Africa who revered and loved Ali did so in a different way than they revered and loved Michael Jordan. They had Michael Jordan t-shirts that
right.
someone had given them.
Right.
They didn't see him play.
Right.
But this guy transcended that.
Dave made a great point last hour with Chet, which I hadn't thought about in a long time. But obviously, as you said, all pre-internet. I remember, because it wasn't Chicago. I grew up in a small town in upstate New York.
Right, I know.
And when
great, great legendary football player, too.
Yeah, exactly. When I wanted to hear about the first fight back at Madison Square Garden, I had to wait for the paper the next day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, you had to wait for the paper to show up, and then you go read the paper, and you go, oh, look, he won.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a world now
Sports Center?
It's literally 12 hours after the events ended, and you still don't know the results?
As you look at the famous fight, the Rumble in the Jungle, you
right.
look at all the, a few famous fights, it got pretty good coverage. There were hundreds of reporters there and hundreds of writers. Now, it's inconceivable to me the kind of coverage this would get.
Yeah.
And he lived in Chicago for close to, you know, which people forget. There have been some nice stories about it, but he lived in Chicago for roughly 12 years.
Oh, I didn't
he
know
He wanted to be close to Elijah Muhammad.
I mean, I knew he was here, but I didn't know it was for that long.
Well, I took, over the weekend, I took little Fiona, who didn't, she's 11 years old.
She
didn't quite know
daughter.
Who this was, but she's like so intrigued by him. We went over to his old house. 4944 South Woodlawn. It's still there. It's a beautiful mansion. Block from where Elijah Muhammad used to live, where Louis Farrakhan now lives.
Okay.
That was his last place. He had a little place in South Shore for a while. Then he had a penthouse apartment in South Shore. Then he moved one more time, I think, and then he moved into this remarkable house. And there were a number of people out there just looking at the house. They weren't leaving things. I didn't see anything left there. But people forget that he was here, and he was very visible here. He was very visible. I remember him going to Gene and Georgetti's, for goodness sake.
I was thinking, outside of Louisville, this is probably the other town he's identified with, right?
That's right, and his kids wound up living here, and then after he moved to L.A. and spent some time in L.A. with his then-second wife, who was from L.A., then he came back and lived in Berrien Springs, Michigan.
That's what I was going to ask you. I thought he had a place in Michigan.
No question. Yeah. He came back after he was in L.A., then he came back here, and he had close ties to Chicago. I didn't know him well, but for some time, my racquetball partner was a man named Cleve Walker,
okay,
who was Muhammad Ali's great friend and his only non-Muslim business advisor. One of the great moments in my life, we used to play with Jim Hogue, the Robert Redford lookalike editor of the Sun-Times, and a managing editor called Gregory Favre. We played every Friday. Cleve and I were teammates, and one day he comes in the locker room, he goes, that was a good game today. How would you boys like to go see the champ fight? And we're like, well, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, I have these tickets for you. Ringside tickets.
Come on.
To Muhammad Ali's second fight with Leon Spinks, September 1978, in the Superdome in New Orleans.
Come on.
And we went. We all went. How could you not
go?
How could you not go?
Of course.
How could you not go? And then, it's not. This is not a personal story. It's about Cleve Walker, who was one of the great people I've ever known. Cleve married a woman who worked for CPS in 1980. And Muhammad Ali was to be his best man. Muhammad Ali had just been beaten up by Larry Holmes pretty badly. So we're at McCormick Place in this very nice room, about 200 people, me and the racquetball partners on our various dates, and in walks Muhammad Ali, very bruised, with a swollen face. And, of course, the crowd goes crazy with Instamatic cameras and things, and they rush up to him, and he gets up on the podium and says, "Please, this is the day for my friends Cleve and Belvon. I will be happy to take photos with you after this, if you just wait." Immediately, all the cameras went down. Everybody sat down. He was
how great as that?
He was great. He was great. He once, another time, and Dave and I were just talking about, and Andrea, how he attracted a crowd wherever he went. One day, we're playing racquetball over here at the old Lakeshore Club, and it was Friday afternoon, like 5 o'clock. No one's ever there. And there's this huge bustle and noise. And who is standing above us watching the four of us play racquetball but Muhammad Ali and about every person who was doing sit-ups upstairs had rushed down to be near him. And we go, "Cleve, what's he doing here?" He goes, "Well, Champ and I are going to dinner after this." And we're like, "Okay."
So he just came over to meet Cleve.
Well, of course, he came to pick him up, in his Rolls Royce.
Now, did he hang out in town? Did he have a restaurant that he preferred? Did he?
I saw him. And the great thing was, I never liked to intrude on him because so many people were there. I would always come up and say, "Mr. Muhammad, Mr. Ali, I'm Cleve Walker's friend." And he'd always say, it happened three times, once at an airport, once at Gina Giorgetti's, and just, I think, on the street somewhere. And he goes, "You're the racquetball player that Cleve carries on his back." And I said, "Yes, sir, that's right. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right."
And I'm told, because I never met him, but I'm told he always stared you in the eye when he talked to you.
No question.
Firm handshake.
Beyond firm.
But also you had that little glint in his eye. And if he gave you the needle, you were his friend.
Yeah. He and I never got into, you know, trading witticisms because I'd be way, way, way too intimidated.
He didn't do any rhymes. "My name is Kogan." Yes, that's my name.
I still think his greatest poem, he was famous for his poems. I think he may have been at Harvard getting some award. And so some bright Harvard nerd, yuppie, pre-yuppie, gets him and says, "I wonder if you could do a really short poem. I mean, did you do that?" And he said, "Me, we." Which I still think is among the most inspired poems I've ever heard in my life.
The most done with two words ever.
Yeah. I also want to just, I know you people have read tons of stuff, but Neil Steinberg has a great line in one of his pieces about Ali, and he's really right about this. He says, "Cassius Clay was born in Kentucky, but Muhammad Ali was born on the south side of Chicago."
That's really
true. He spent a lot of time at the Nation of Islam, used to. They may still have a bakery. I think it was on 69th Street. He was a real presence on the south side. He wasn't, he wasn't down here parading the avenue and shopping at the...
Did he have a relationship with Farrakhan?
Pardon me? Oh, yeah.
Ali?
I think so. He must have. But
there was a break with Malcolm X.
Yes.
And after the break with Malcolm X and the violent rhetoric from Malcolm X, and after obviously Malcolm X was killed, there was a break. So I wondered if the Farrakhan rhetoric turned him off in some way.
Can't tell because I don't think he was as verbally ambulatory
as
he was.
That's true.
And one very interesting thing, is the day that Malcolm X was assassinated, a fire of mysterious origins burned Ali's home.
Is that right?
Same day. So that begs a ton of questions. Another piece you people should read, and I had forgotten about this, it's at RogerEbert.com. It is about the day in 1977. Roger Ebert, the esteemed film critic for the Sun-Times, if you people don't know. He was in Los Angeles. He took Muhammad Ali, after Muhammad Ali's appearance on The Tonight Show, hosted by Diana Ross, to see Rocky II. He went with his wife and his little daughter.
Hold on a second. You took Ali to Rocky?
Yes.
How great is that night?
Well, the whole piece is fabulous because Ali is giving commentary. He went with his wife and his little then baby daughter, Hannah. They went to it. The whole piece is great, but here is the best part of it. Muhammad Ali got up carefully so as not to wake Hannah and handed his daughter to Veronica. A great movie. He said, a big hit. It has all the ingredients, love, violence, emotion. The excitement never dulled. Then Roger asked him, what do you think about the way the fight turned out? Ali said, for the black man to come out superior would be against America's teachings. I have been so great in boxing, they have to create an image like Rocky, a white image on the screen to counteract my image in the ring. America has to have its white images no matter where it gets them. Jesus, Wonder Woman, Tarzan, and Rocky. That is one of the most spectacular quotes I've ever heard. And it sounds just like him.
Yeah, and you know what? You could argue it.
Huh?
You could argue it. You could absolutely argue
it. I'm not going to argue it.
No, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I can't. I actually can't argue that point.
Rick Hogan, here you go. I was talking earlier about Kopic. Here's your walking, talking historian right here.
Sure.
Right, this is the first library. This is your Chicago library right there. great to see you, buddy.
You too.
Stand by. Bill and Wendy in for me at 9. We'll take a break for traffic here on 720 WGN.